Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hi!
Welcome to Scam Wow!
I'm Caitlin Brodnick.
I'm Sue Smith.
And we love scams.
And we love scams.
Guys, we love scams. We love you. We love art heists. Art scams, art lies. We love them.
Wait, before we get started, I need to tell you a story.
I was
here last week telling you how I wanted to scam my way into a COVID vaccine, and I freaking did it, baby.
She got it, guys.
I did it. And through no fault of my own. I was waiting for a prescription at Kaiser, and a woman sidled up to me and she whispered, she was like, "Do you want the vaccine?" And I was like, "Yeah.
It's yeah, like a I science do. Fiction movie. Yes, inject me."
Yes. I was like, "Get right in my arm." And so I went into a back room. She took me into a back room where there were lots of nurses and chairs, and that was more efficient.
Other cult members there, obviously.
Right.
You had to wear a mask, a different kind.
She herself did not look like a nurse, but there were nurses present. And I got the vaccine, and they scheduled my second one, even though I was not remotely qualified, and I don't feel bad.
Wow. Oh, I'm so happy you got it. I'm so happy. And I'm so happy that it came to you. You did manifest it. You know, you didn't like scam anyone. Thank God. So you don't have to feel bad about it. But thank God you got it.
Yeah. No, I did not do any scamming. And I was fully prepared. I joined a Facebook group called Los Angeles Vaccine Hunters. Like, I was ready. That lovely laugh in the background. We should tell you our guest today is producer Kate.
Kate!
It's me, I'm here.
Welcome, Kate. Back. So guys, we bamboozled producer Kate. We were casually talking about our topic today, and she goes, "Oh, I saw that movie. Oh, I read that article." And we said, "You're in the podcast, bitch.
You're
our special guest. Get your mic ready."
And I did.
You're in it.
I did hook up my entire system just because you said that. So here we are.
And guys, she has a pizza in the oven. She's not interested in this.
It's going to be a cold pizza.
Oh, no.
You can eat it yourself, Kate. You're the producer.
No, it's fine. I do it for you because I love you. And I love this little scammers. So I'm here. I'm excited.
That means a lot, guys. Kate is letting her pizza get cold for you guys.
Yeah.
You could also say that Kate is scamming life right now. She's like,
Kate has up and left. We don't know where she is.
Okay.
She is on the road.
I don't know
where Kate is.
I am running a scam on
capitalism
because I am currently quote unquote homeless.
Yes.
Because I am bouncing from Airbnb across the country, Airbnb to Airbnb across the country. All of my things are in a storage unit in the middle of New Jersey. And I'm paying less rent than I was in New York without any of the need for a deposit or insurance or utilities or any of that. And I'm living in Texas, Colorado, Montana.
Guys.
So, yeah.
That's amazing.
And then we'll be back in New York in September.
Wow.
You have to come back.
You are scamming life.
This is the most exciting thing. You should go to Japan next. You should really keep going. You should start a cult, Kate. I'm not kidding.
I'd be really
Maybe she already has and we're in it.
I mean, well, my husband already has experience in partially leading a cult. You know, he was high up in the management tiers at Cutco. So I feel like he'd be a really good, like, male figurehead.
I would join.
Okay.
What if it's called Jack Cut?
Yeah. We are talking about some great scams today. We're talking about Armie Hammer and his whole family of scammers. The Scammer Hammers.
The Scammer Hammers. I'd never heard that
now
before.
Now, that might be a cult. It might be already.
100%.
They need you as their marketing director, Sue.
I'm not saying I would join a cult with Armie Hammer. I'm not saying that. I never said it.
You're saying you hope he has sex with you, though.
I'm never saying it. I never said that he's so hot that I would definitely join. I didn't say that.
You're fine with donating a rib cage.
I didn't say I was fine with donating a rib cage if it meant I could sleep with him. I didn't say that.
She didn't say it, but she's thinking it.
I wouldn't have the social media for this sex call. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. I'm saying.
Yeah, you're saying that. Okay, great. I just want to make sure I didn't say it.
Here's my thing with people that say, changing the topic, that they like want to like cut a body part of yours. I would say to them, you first. like wait.
Cut off your dick and then we'll talk.
It's like anal sex. It's like you first.
Can I see your rib cage slivered in half? Like, what are you talking about? Like,
may I have your audacity as an hors d'oeuvre before?
Sure. Cut your pinky finger and put it on a platter. Like, you first. And then maybe I could be coerced, you know, given the right medication.
Yeah, this is a joint effort.
Caitlin brings this up because we are talking about Armie Hammer. and he has quite the allegations against him.
Apparently he like sends cannibalistic texts to people and he's abusive. Not to make jokes about it, but he is.
Yeah, no, he's a nightmare.
We don't know that he's into actual cannibalism, but he does fantasize about it. Yes. And he does ask for it.
Yeah, there are text receipts where he is requesting internal organs from women.
Yes.
Insane.
He is saying he would like to bite their necks, things like that.
Yeah, like he saw Twilight and was like, what a great gig that is. I want to live forever, a rich person, and chew on some people.
Hammer wants to be a vampire.
A hammer vamp.
Before I said that, it rhymed, but it didn't when I
hammer
came out.
Vamper. He's a hammer vamp.
He's a vammer.
Hammer vamp.
Yeah. The army scammer is a hammer vammer.
Hammer vamp.
So there was a Vanity Fair article recently about Armie Hammer's whole scammy family. And apparently his line of scams, his lineage of scamming goes way, way back. His great, great grandfather was descended from the Russians. He was Russian and he came to America.
Which isn't inherently scammy, but he...
No.
He was scammy once he got here. We don't know what he did in Russia. Similar to my family, he could have come on a boat and scammed his way just like my family did.
Sure. Dr. Julius Hammer. And he gave a woman an abortion who later died.
Oh. Yeah. Also, was he a real doctor? Who knows?
It's we don't know.
The mystery, part of the risk.
Okay.
Yeah. So there is that of Dr. Julius. And then there was Armand Hammer, not Armie, Armand, who was also scammy.
You guys know that Armand Hammer bought Armand Hammer?
He bought stock in it, right?
They existed separately, right? There was Armand Hammer baking soda and variety of other cleaning products. And then there was a gentleman named Armand Hammer. And Armand Hammer became so rich that he went and decided to buy Arm and Hammer.
That's a great idea.
Oh, my
Invest
God.
In yourself.
He was like, this sounds like my name. I need to own it.
It feels to me like that whole, like, you put 100 monkeys in a room, they're going to write Hamlet. Like, that's...
God. Wait, okay, yes, but go on.
There's only so many ideas, like repetition. So what I mean is, like, the idea that his name is Armand Hammer and the company's named Armand Hammer and those two things happened organically on their own just means that our brains, like, aren't that wide, I think is what I'm saying.
Also, so apparently it says that he is an American oil tycoon.
Mm-hmm. That's before he bought the cleaning company.
So Julius Hammer was sentenced to prison for being in socialism and doing stuff that was socialist and people didn't like. So when he went to prison, Armand
He also
Hammer,
worked with Stalin. Not just socialist, he was hanging Communist. Out with Stalin. Yeah.
Right.
We're playing fast and loose with the facts here, guys.
You can read it on your own. This is a wild episode.
Armand Hammer took over Allied Drug, which is the family business, this drug company. And he resold equipment and he was scammy with that.
He also said he had medical training in Russia and it causes him to see no pain of the sufferings of others. That's out of control. That is an insane statement.
But what we know about Russian people, is that completely unbelievable?
No, the quote is directly saying, for a judge in court, when he divorced his second wife, Angela, it, quote, it causes him no pain to see the sufferings of others.
So he's a psychopath.
That's what I was saying. Like, he's Russian.
Yeah. In the 1980s, Hammer owned a considerable amount of stock in Church & Dwight, the company that manufactures Arm & Hammer products. He also served on its board of directors. However, the Arm & Hammer company's brand did not originate with Arm & Hammer.
Insane. Absolutely crazy.
It was in use 31 years before Hammer was born.
Wow. Also, there's a bizarre note that he convinced the Chinese leaders to lend two pandas to Los Angeles for the city's 1984 Olympics. This guy's all over the place.
He's all like, over the place.
He had a private Boeing 727. He hung out with Prince Charles and high power politicians. And they said he attended inaugurations of FDR, Reagan, George Bush. But I think he was also oh yeah, he was in Epstein.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. He was like, wait, they all were.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In the Vanity Fair article, it says, in 1996, Epstein's bombshell biography exposed the late chairman for a wide-ranging gifts, including laundering money, using artwork to fund Soviet espionage, bribing his way to the oil business, and knocking off Fabergé eggs. Per Epstein, Armand bugged his office and home, plus his cufflinks, to record decades worth of conversations, had a fixer, and was known to do business with a briefcase full of cash.
Love. So good.
Fabulous.
So then Armin had a son named Julian Hammer. And that was Armin's only son, Julian. And Julian, in 1955, in the morning hours after his 26th birthday, he killed a man inside his Los Angeles home over a gambling debt.
As you do.
Yeah. And advances on his wife. So Julian was the only son of Armin. And then Julian had two kids, Michael and Casey. Michael is Army Hammer's father. Casey works at Home Depot.
Casey is an icon. Casey is my hero. Casey grew up in this incredibly rich, affluent, psychotic family filled with like money laundering, murders, lies. And she's like, she's basically rejected all of them. And so because of that, because she's come out and been clean and honest, she has no money and she's at Home Depot just like me. I really
just
love
like
her.
Everybody else.
Just like us. She's just like us.
Wow. And so she is, wait, she's Army Hammer, the movie stars. No, it's his aunt, right?
His okay. aunt, yes. But Michael's sister. And Michael right. is at the center of the art heist
that we're going to talk about.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
He was the one who
owned the gallery.
No.
Yes.
He got her. He appointed that dumbass because she was his friend, not because she was good at art or knows any art.
I didn't know they were linked.
Yes. And he fired her. And that's why
that's
they're
so
like.
Exciting. Is he the guy with the hair and he looks like
gross hair?
The tan.
Tan.
Yes.
Tan, gross hair.
I have to say, I feel like because when you were talking about him hanging out with Prince Charles and Jeffrey Epstein.
His dad.
Right. His dad. I feel like those wealthy people, they're all like that. They're all terrible, scammy, murdery people. Like, we should
they're
assume.
They're just so rich that they're like, move over. I'm so rich. I'm here. I'm present. I'm going to feast on your body parts. I'm here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to that I say, you first.
To that we say, you can have a seat at the table. Cut yourself first, baby.
You first.
I'll pass you the knife first, my lord. Mm. And then we'll see.
Michael got all the money when his father died. Casey got nothing. Michael has a bunch of hustles, one of which is owning an art gallery or owned an art gallery in New York. Army Hammer is Michael Hammer's son. And they had a house in Los Angeles for the majority of Army Hammer's life. And then they're like, fuck this. It's not sunny enough. We're moving to the Cayman Islands, which is sketchy. And, you know, they're funneling
offshore
money
bank
through
accounts.
That. Yes, they're funneling money through that some way. Again, I don't know. Allegedly speculating, of course. But Army Hammer is in the news and he was dropped by his agents and he was released from projects because he was running scams on a bunch of people. And there was an Instagram account called House of Effie that was tagging him or posting all these messages from women who he had taken advantage of.
Yes.
I don't know. Yeah. It's a weird.
Abused, unclear. There's just like that whole fabulous gray area that finally is getting the attention it deserves.
Yeah.
And people are calling out these awful men.
My understanding is like 90% of it is women who are alleging basically text harassment to the extent of, and it's all kind of the same story of this like dom sub relationship with cannibalism in between.
The same old cannibal story we've heard mm-hmm. for years.
Of course. But there are a couple women who are alleging actual physical assault. So it's a little bit like that takes it to another level.
Oh, there yeah. are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And like
yeah,
past
yeah.
girlfriends that were like, you know, chronically abused by him.
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
Can I tell you how I found out about Armie Hammer and all this stuff? My wonderful friend Elijah, who keeps me up to date on the things that are going on Twitter because I can't be there. He sent me, did you know about this? And it was a link to a Twitter about Armie Hammer being into cutting off people's toes. And I was very confused. And then he explained it to me that he was into cannibalism as a kink, yada, yada. And then I was like, okay, why is this important? And he said, well, gay Twitter is having a field day. Because gay Twitter is posting a series of photos like, oh, Armie Daddy, I scraped my knee in front of your house. I need someone to help me. So that's how I found out in November. And then a couple months later, he texted me and he was like, this is taking a turn. I take back everything I said. Like, this is no longer funny.
But do we know if he's actually been a cannibal?
That I don't know. If we're talking about like coercive, manipulative behavior.
I don't want to see it, but I want to know. Did he remove a toe?
Sure. Listen, hey, I honestly, when this first happened, before some of the terrible stuff that I'm sure we're going to get into, I originally was like, if it's an adult woman who's like, hell yeah, I'll lose a toe for you, bud.
Great. Consent.
What? Who are we to say?
Lose a toe, gain a mansion. Like, what? Lose a toe, gain a private jet? Like,
who are we to say?
What are the benefits?
Exactly. I'm not going to yuck anyone's yums.
Who among us won't trade a toe for a Cayman Island?
I'll eat a toe. I don't care.
Yeah, you can have it.
Would I, not for Armie Hammer, given everything we know, but would I for Jake Gyllenhaal give up a toe?
100%.
Well, that little 100%. Moppy guy?
100%.
I would do it for my little toe, but not my big toe.
Not my big toe. Now, Chris Evans, I'd give my big toe.
Not okay. my big toe.
Chris Evans, I'd give him my big toe. I'd get a little prosthetic one.
Oh, you can get a prosthetic.
Can you do that? They got prosthetic toes?
They have prosthetic everything.
Oh, fuck
See, that
it.
Raises Take the it. Level, right? That makes
that raises
it more.
The level. But I would definitely want not only the man, but I want all of the things. I want want the checks. I want the deeds to homes. I want, you know, other foreign bank accounts. Sure. And I want gold bars. And that's what I want.
There's a whole other conversation that we could have about later on about like the 50 Shades of Grey effect. The idea of like being in a dom king relationship with a wealthy, powerful man. Because you get something.
But how much do you... I want to get a lot. Like, that's the thing. It's like, if I'm doing this, I want so much
In that
stuff.
Movie, she got a family and she became a CEO.
She did?
Yeah.
That's too much work. I just want to be able to lay in bed and have things brought to me on a table.
I feel like that's an option if that's what you want. I'm just saying.
That's all I want.
So I'm reading from the Vanity Fair article. Basically, all the chaos really happened. Not only was it just like a fun bubbling of like insane people, when Armie Hammer died, Forbes said he was worth around $180 million, which I'm sure he was worth more because of those offshore bank accounts.
Yeah.
So the estate began. It still simmers 30 years later, it says. But within hours of his death, police officers were summoned to the house, observed Michael attempting to remove belongings and load into 5 waiting cars. So...
There's some sketchy...
There's a lot of insanity. I think they left Casey, who we love, Miss Home Depot, $250,000. And
she was like, great, this is deadly squat.
Fine, yeah. But the boys got way more.
Of course.
Did you guys see about the naughty chair that the dad had?
No.
It was his coat of arms or something?
So the dad, apparently, Michael Hammer, the one who owns the art gallery that we're about to talk about, in the headquarters of his foundation, like the Hammer something foundation, that would apparently donate to organizations like Jews for Jesus.
Okay.
Ugh.
In his headquarters, he bragged about having what he called a naughty chair, which was some kind of like bondage chair. And there was a cage and like a hook involved. And when Vanity Fair called to confirm, his counsel said, oh, well, these were just gag gifts. Like, didn't even deny the existence of the chair.
It's definitely like, there.
Oh, these were just gag gifts. So mm-hmm. what I understand from that is that Army has inherited a learned behavior from his dad. And what's fucked up is it's a learned sexual behavior. So, like, what was happening there in that house?
Well, and celebrated and bragged about. Because if Michael Hammer is telling everyone that this is a cool thing he has at his headquarters, a child grows up
what
in that house going, like,
kid?
This is something my dad's bragging about. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Like, what is he telling his kid about women specifically?
Yeah.
That he wants to eat them. There's a lot.
How do you get from chair to eating? And they're pretty close, probably. They're probably pretty close.
You put a chair at a dinner table where you eat.
That's how you get there.
Caitlin's so simple. You put a chair at a dinner table and we're there.
Sue did that.
We're there.
Sue did it all. She figured it out for us. Guys, what are you doing right now? Wouldn't you rather be sleeping? Not to sound, you know, exactly like myself, but I love sleeping. I love curling up in bed. I love being under a blanket and I love just relaxing. And thank God Helix Mattress is here. We are so lucky to be partnering with Helix Mattress. They're amazing. First of all, I just want to say we as people evolve, change. We have different likes, different loves, different interests. Your mattress should change with you. Like maybe when you were a tiny child, you could sleep on the hardwood floor and not notice. But as we age and grow and learn about our bodies, our mattresses need to change as well. Sue's talked about it, how she went from a sweaty Betty to like a real cool mama with her new Helix mattress. And I've talked about my love of their pillows. But what's so awesome is that Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes and it matches your body type and sleep preferences with the perfect mattress for you. So why would you buy a mattress that's made for somebody else when with Helix, you're getting a mattress that you know is exactly perfect to the way you sleep? And we're spending a lot more time on our bed. So I feel that this is the time that if we are given a quiz, like we are ready, we are prepared to answer multiple questions about how we lay in bed. Everybody is unique and Felix knows about that. So they have several different mattress models to choose from. They have soft, medium, a firm mattress. They're ones that are great for cooling down if you sleep hot, and a Helix mattress for plus size people because all bodies are important. All bodies are inclusive. Everybody deserves a good, wonderful night's sleep. So Sue took the Helix quiz. She got matched with the perfect mattress and she'll admit she's a better human because of it. So if you're looking for a mattress, you just take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped free, and you don't need to go to a mattress store again, because guess what? We're not going to stores. And when things open up, I don't really feel like going to a store. As I said, I'd rather be in bed. Helix is awesome, but you don't have to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress picks of 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine. They're not lying. So just go to helixsleep.com/scamwow. That's helixsleep.com/scamwow. Take their 2 minute sleep quiz and they will match you with a customized mattress and you're going to get the best sleep of your life. Also, this is bonkers. They have a 10-year warranty and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. That's exactly what ScamWow listeners want. Like, we will not be duped. We will try it out for 100 nights. Maybe night 55, you decide it's not the mattress for you, but it is because you're going to love it. And they'll even pick it up for you if you don't like it. But you won't want to return it because you're going to be asleep. You're going to live so much of your life sleeping better. You're going to be a nicer person. It's fabulous. Also, Helix is offering up to $200 of all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/scamwow. So make sure you go to helixsleep.com/scamwow because if you're one of our listeners, you get up to $200 off your mattress and 2 free pillows. And I am living my best life on these pillows and they are the large, luscious pillows. Like I have fancy pillowcases for these pillows. We would not steer you in the wrong direction. You know that we double check things, triple check, because we refuse to be scammed. And I just wish you all a peaceful, scam-free sleep.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
So that brings us to the art heist.
So the documentary we're talking about is called Made to Look, A True Story of about Fake Art, and it's on Netflix. And it's about the Knoedler Gallery in New York.
And Michael inherited it from Armand Hammer, and it's one of the oldest New York galleries. I believe it was started after the Civil War. Like, it was super, super early. And then he appointed his friend, Anne Friedman. Now, this is where I went nuts. Now, Anne Friedman is a friend of Michael Hammer. She is not a scholarly, like, she's just a buddy. She's just a buddy. Who knows what else? He could have boned her. I don't know. I'm calling it. But like, the thing is like, she isn't an expert. And that's what we have to start with, that she is not an expert. She is just somebody in like the high society that he chose to be his art director.
Knoedler was in operation for 165 years. That's insane.
Yeah.
For like one small business to be in operation for that long. Yeah. So after Hammer's death in 1990, after Armin Hammer's death in 1990, the Hammer Foundation continued to hold a controlling interest in the gallery with Michael Hammer in charge.
Right. So in this gallery, they were actually, I think he got it, and they did say that they, I guess while Michael was in charge of the gallery, while Anne was working with it, Michael did use the gallery for his own personal finances, and he would use it as his credit card. So the gallery was actually in an incredible amount of debt very quickly. I'm not sure if it was in debt before he signed on, but it quickly became flourished in debt. And like most art galleries, you pay for the paintings, you acquire the paintings. In some art galleries, you honestly just showcase the paintings. They're not yours. You showcase it for the artist. It is like a way that you can sort of both of you benefit. You're showing how amazing and interesting and smart you are to acquire this art. The artist then can be showcased in a legit gallery. And then a buyer comes and buys it, pays the art gallery a commission. And, you know, the artist wins, the buyer wins. And it's all very like nice, fancy, high society. It's a lot of like street credit. That's what they are.
And so the gallery's president was this lady, Anne Friedman, who Caitlin hates. But hate. I have a different take on it.
Ooh, hate. Juicy.
I think she was conned. Caitlin thinks she was the scammer.
No, I think she's an egocentric idiot. I think she was conned too, but I think her ego was so big that she was a dumbass.
Well, I mean, she's an art person. Like, of course. I don't know.
No, but the thing is that there were so many, and we'll explain the whole scam to you guys, but there were so many huge red flags that were inconvenient to her. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a time, and we've talked about this, and we've talked about Connors. Actually, the woman who they interviewed a lot in this movie, we love. She's the one who wrote The Confidence Game.
Maria Konnikova.
Yes, I'm such a huge fan of Maria Konnikova. And she explained that there is sort of this psychological change that once the scam has become such a part of your reality, there's like this cognitive dissonance that you then have to sort of go down with this sinking ship, or else your idea of reality is forever shattered. And you're basically, you're a joke. What's the point of your life? So I think that's where Anne was.
So one day, this lady named Glafira Rosales walks into Knoedler. She was like, hey, I've got all these fake paintings. I've got a Motherwell, a Pollock, a Rothko. I'm keeping them out in my garage in Long Island. And Anne Friedman was like, okay, sounds legit. And so,
well, she also was like, Anne, it's this real fancy guy who has a horrible life story. Anne Friedman's like, I love horrible life stories. I love Michael Hammer. And she's like, he's basically has to be incognito. I can't tell you anything about him because it's like high profile, and rich people hide things. And Anne's like, great. I love secrets. I love lies.
That's what Glafira was saying that to Anne, where she was getting the paintings from.
Because paintings have to have some sort of a paper trail for you to have seen the painting in the artist's works of art, or seen, you know, in their collection. But these were also all new paintings that have never been seen before. So Glafira was saying, look, Anne, these are brand new. They're unheard of. They're undocumented.
Meanwhile, Glafira is living with this guy, Jose Carlos Bargantinos Diaz, who is a noted forger who's already spent time in jail.
So good at forging documents.
Yeah, he's already spent time in jail for forgery, and Anne doesn't even do a quick Google and see this.
Or she does, and she's like, yeah, but my friend Glafira, she's told me enough like fun, cool ideas about like the high and mighty. Also, they said that Glafira was quiet, she was modest, she did everything in this way that she was like, look, I'll let you in a little secret. And I think Anne felt titillated and excited, and that she was in on this super secret, like Mr. X stuff, discovery of these never heard of paintings. Now, what's really interesting is they said in the movie, like people like Pollock and even Rothko, they were pretty well documented. There were occasional times where artists weren't, you know, you may have missed one or two, but to have like multiple paintings be missed was unheard of in the art world, but Anne thought she had hit some like magic jewel.
Right. And she was reselling these paintings for a killing, and she was making commission on these shits.
She made a total of $10 million in 30 years.
That's wild. In commission. Just in commission. We don't know what her base salary is.
No.
So the thing that brought it down was Domenico Del Sol and his wife, Eleanor.
Who looks like the most interesting man in the world.
Yeah. And his wife, Eleanor, they like look like stereotypically like fucking art people.
Yeah.
Said that Anne sold them a fake Mark Rothko for $8.3 million in 2004. And said that Rothko's son, like Paul Rothko, had said it looked real. So she thought it was real. But this guy, Domenico, would not back down. And he took it all the way to trial. And that's why Knoedler ended up closing.
Well, Pierre Lagrange said that he would buy, I believe it's like a $4 million painting from the Knoedler Gallery. But if he could get it authenticated, and if forensics said that the paint was of the era, if the canvas is of the era, great. But if anything was off, he would get a full refund. And I think that really started the wheels turning because it became very public. And it was so funny. So in the interview, Anne says she remembers exactly what he said to her. She remembers exactly like the words he said, what drink he was holding, like when he basically threatened her and said, like, I will destroy you. And then they said, what did you say to him? And she's like, you know, I don't know if I said that. She just like, Al and I were dying. We're like, she's love. Just chosen to just not remember any of her responsibility. And so the thing that was crazy is because there are basically companies created to track your heritage, your pedigree of your painting. Yeah. And you have to have multiple galleries signed off on it. And they'll literally have that a card with the painting, or sometimes in the back of the painting, they'll like have it written on there. And the way you can track that is you can literally look up and Google, was that artist ever featured by that gallery? Mm-hmm, so all of these, is it patronages? So all of these like different histories.
Oh, I know what you mean. It's a French word for like the line back to the original owner.
Yeah.
Oh, because they're talking about this now in NFTs, which are like a Bitcoin blockchain situation. It's called fuck. Provenance.
Yes. So provenance. And what was so funny is the documentary does a really good job, guys, of like slowly giving information and slowly sort of doling it out so that you're in suspense. I ruined it for my husband the whole time. I was like, that provenance was forged. I was like, that email was a fake email. Like the whole time I was calling it out because it was such a clearly to us as scamsperts now, it was such a clearly done scam. So all the provenance they needed, emails saying, I confirmed, I've seen the painting, I love it, it is exactly a Rothko, congratulations, were forged.
I just want to say, so Lagrange had purchased what he thought was a Jackson Pollock for $17 million in 2007. And he was, yeah, and it was contingent upon this provenance, but he never got it. And then he sued the gallery as well. And some of the tests on it to determine the provenance showed that some of the paint was used was not available until some years after Pollock's death.
Right.
Ooh.
And also what they said was unheard of is that they had like sand. So what was really smart with these con artists is they would take canvases from paintings in, let's say, 1900s or whenever they were created, 1920s, 50s, whatever. They sanded down the paint to then put new paint on top of it. And that is an absurd thing because Jackson Pollock would not sand down a painting. He would have a fresh new canvas. But during this whole time, they go back to Anne and she's like, alleged. Like she just really can't let it go. She can't let it go. It's like, and people will be like, well, Anne, that paint wasn't available in that time. Like Pollock was dead by the time they had that specific yellow. And she's like, I guess, you know, you could say that. I guess you could say it's like
I love her.
I love that. Actually, you're starting, Katie, I know that you hate her, but you're really starting to convince me that she's great.
She's amazing.
I hate her because she gets away, guys, she gets away with all of it. I don't think she paid a single cent. I think Michael Hammer paid with everything. She gets away with all of it. But she's just, but then Gloriana, what's her name?
Glaphyra
went to jail.
I know. And I feel bad for Glaphyra.
I don't feel bad for Glaphyra. She was running such a scam.
She was running a great scam.
Let me tell you who the actual the actual forger was. Okay, so Glafira was running. So Glafira had the scam where she was getting a guy in Queens to forge him. Had the art
Queens
forger was
the
named
money. Yes.
Patient Quan, and mm-hmm. he was making them in his garage in Queens, and he said that he was doing it because he loved the old masters,
for
and
fun.
That's a tribute to the old masters.
Just
so
for fun.
Great.
And also, he wasn't getting paid very much money. He was scammed in this as well. Like, he was very much underpaid.
He was
completely creating forgeries. He was signing the artist's name, but he wasn't getting paid. Like, he wasn't making on this.
He is reported to have received less than $9,000 each each painting, which she sold for millions and millions of dollars mm-hmm. each.
Mm-hmm. Kate, what's your hot take?
Yes, Kate, tell us.
So this, watching this documentary, first off, it's funny because I love when rich people are scammed and it doesn't
hurt
them.
All do.
Love.
It doesn't hurt them at all. Okay. They're all fine. Every single one of them, except for Glafira, who had to go to prison and probably was being manipulated by her boyfriend.
I
and
think she
I
was
feel bad
enough by
her.
Him too. It was like,
bad for her. But I think this reminds me of like the housing crisis in the sense that, you know how Moody's and Poor was that financial agency that would rate whether
like, I'm
or
Moody
not...
and Poor. What do you mean? That was me during that time. Yeah.
I love that. I narrated that and I love it. What was I saying? Oh, well, the Moody and Poor's, who were actually happy and rich, they were an agency that was charged with giving ratings to different mutual funds or whatever. And they would basically just give, like, if you were from Deutsche Bank or Citibank, they'd be like, oh, it's an A+, despite the fact that it was absolute garbage. And I think that there was this understanding in the industry where the guys at Deutsche Bank were like, well, we can kind of give them trash and they're going to give us an A+ anyway, because if they don't, like, it looks bad for them because we're good business. And Moody and Poor's were like, well, they might be giving us trash, but we're going to give them an A+ anyway, because we have to do that because that's part of our job. And then the people selling the funds were like, well, some of these might be bad, but it doesn't matter because people want to buy funds and we have them. I really feel like watching this documentary was just a series of interviews of everybody covering their own ass.
Like, I
looked at it and I had my doubts. No, you didn't. No, you fucking didn't. And I think Anne Friedman's the only one who's like, no, we've been doing this for years. We're all scammers. Why is everyone telling a different story? I thought we didn't snitch here, mm-hmm. you know? And everyone's like, oh, it's fake, it's fake, it's fake. And she's like, I thought we weren't snitching.
No, she's an idiot.
She should be snitching.
I mean, like, I do think she's dumb, but I just think that the idea that all of these people were like, oh, forgeries, how could we? We're so honorable. No.
No, they're all pieces of shit.
They forge.
Yeah. There's forgeries all over the Met. Like, it's a fucking part of the industry.
And what's so interesting, too, is they said in the documentary that there's a huge feeling of, like, embarrassment and clout and ego that if you said, oh, that doesn't look real to me, you're some kind of an idiot. Or if you don't realize that that is a Rothko, you're some kind of a dummy. And the painting can be a beautiful painting. Like, you can say the painting takes my breath away. But that doesn't mean it's painted by the original artist. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this whole feeling of, like, I think Anne took that too. Like, people that said they thought the painting was beautiful. So Rothko's son said the painting was beautiful. And she's like, that's all I needed to know. It's like, no. This was done in a Queens garage. Like, everybody was so afraid to come off looking stupid. And then they were all duped.
I think an economy built on elitism is ripe for scamming. You know?
Also, I think they were happy to throw money in it. They're like, and if it's not real, well, what am I going
to
lose?
Because they're just showing it off to their friends. They don't give a fuck about art. They're just, it's an investment piece, or they're just putting it in their fucking house.
Well, and also for them, it isn't going to hurt them. Like, it isn't life-changing, these art pieces. It's embarrassing. But for them to be able to go like, I see some red flags, but red flag, schmed flag. Let's get the Rothko.
It feels like that. The episode that you did about sour grapes, about the fancy, fancy wine and the guy was drinking.
Yeah, it's a lot like sour grapes.
And they were like, and the wine tasted amazing. How are we supposed to know the difference? And all these dudes are like, he was such a genius with wine. He had such a good palate. And they bring it to one expert at a restaurant, one real sommelier. And he goes, this tastes like shit.
Who has nothing invested in it.
That's
yes.
what this feels like. Because there's one scientist somewhere who was like, this is so obviously fake. Why are you all like bloviating at each other?
Yeah.
Like sucking each other's dicks, eating each other's toes. Guys.
Stop eating your toes and fungus.
And sucking your dicks.
Yeah. Get your head out of that dick.
Get your head out of the dick. I also think it's interesting and shitty that the people of color in the story were the ones who went to jail while the white people got off. Like, I fucking hate that.
Of course. That made me so angry. And it made me so angry that Anne still was like, I'm such a victim. And it's like, in no way, like, you might feel stupid, but you have made money off of this. You have benefited from knowing the Hammer family. You benefited this entire time. And you had the luxury of ignoring red flags because at this place, you are a rich, white, famous woman. And then anybody else that was not you in your wake, they really suffered. And that drove
me
crazy.
She's still an art dealer. She's still working in that business.
She created her own stupid art dealer. Guys, she's an idiot. I think she's really not good.
So Glyphira served 3 months in jail and was ordered to pay $81 million to the victims of the Nodler art fraud scheme. $81 million.
She won't. And now she works in a, she's a waitress in Brooklyn.
Is
she? There's anything wrong with that. Yeah.
I wonder if her and Casey know each other. Do you think Casey's working at a Home Depot in Brooklyn?
No, Casey's in San Francisco.
San Diego.
San Diego.
Yeah.
They should have a support group.
They should be pen pals.
They
really should.
Scammed by the Hammers.
The amazing artist went back to China right away. He had nobody stopped him. Nobody, his passport wasn't flagged or anything. Good for him. He got out. I mean, he got the worst end of the deal. And then her boyfriend ran to Spain, and he's interviewed on this great documentary in Spain with the wobbliest, fattest neck I've ever seen. And if that doesn't tell you he's a liar, I don't know what does.
The wobbliest.
He's got a wobbly, fat neck.
His jowls were his jowls did him in. Like, his jowls were proof that he's a liar.
Is that where he's hiding all of his forgeries?
All of his penny jowls.
It's all in his neck.
He admitted, he admitted to beating Glyphira up a little bit, and so then deeply hate him. And he forged a ton of documents.
Ugh. But, you know, in the spirit of that, I think in the spirit of forgery, getting one over on the man, getting one over on rich people who are into art, Caitlin has something to reveal to us.
Oh, let me be clear. I love art fraud. Wait. If this wasn't clear, I adore art fraud. I was mad at the elitism that was behind it, and I was mad of anybody of color that got like the bad end of the deal. But I think art fraud is brilliant because I think it was Stacy, who was one of our guests, who said, why are we sort of like sucking off these masters? Who knows? Like, I think Picasso beat up a woman. Like, they were like, they were shitty old people and of their time, and they were all white men, and they're sort of touted as these best people. But yes, their stuff is great, but why do we have to have such a like God complex with them?
Totally.
And plenty of people of color were never represented and never have been ever, and their paintings, you know, have been lost because that wasn't what was in control at that time. So I think it's so fascinating because in art school, and I've talked about this before, you practice and you learn the quote masters, and you follow all these you follow these lessons of how to paint certain subjects and impressionism and realism and, you know, postmodern everything. And then you become better by copying. Now, I think that you could have a poster in your room of, let's say, a Matisse cutout, or you could have a copy of it that is actually like the real paper, the real stuff. Cause I want to see texture. I like Matisse is a terrible example. Like, cause I love like brush strokes. I love like real thick art paint strokes. And I like the little brush, like hairs floating in your paint. I just love it. So I don't want a copy. I want something that is like a real life growing painting. And it doesn't have to be the one from the 1800s. I don't care.
Sure.
So through a Google Wikipedia search, I came across a painting called Butter.
I'm looking it up for reference.
You guys, I told you I was turned on by it. I felt sexual after watching this.
She did want to fuck the butter.
I wanted to fuck the butter. The way that the knife is shoved into this mound of butter.
Oh my God, I forgot how sexual this painting is.
So it's a butter that is a piece of handmade traditional butter, like a block of butter, clothed in a white gauze that looks like it just slightly was undressed. If this butter was
eggs there. Don't forget
there's
about
two
those
eggs that look like balls.
And and the painting is called Mound of Butter, which is even more
Oh yeah. Of butter. Which is like ladies, my lovely lady humps.
My mound.
My mound. All the mounds.
I love it. I'm obsessed.
And it's gorgeous. And it did create, it was by an artist from the Netherlands. It created an enormous stir at the time. And it was so exciting.
So hot.
Yeah. It's very textured. It's so funny. Like that at this time, for the first time, people aren't just drawing horses. They're like, but I'm going to draw some butter. And everyone's like, oh, shit, he drew butter. Oh, take my clothes off. Like, it was so exciting and revolutionary at the time. So while we were talking about art scams, I looked online and found these companies that are happen to also be in China that have these incredibly skilled artists that, similar to my aunt, a professional artist who took years of following and knows art theory and studied. And then as a profession, they create these copies of the paintings and they do not sign it. And I talked to my aunt and she said that it's completely like acceptable in the art community. And if the thing is you don't sign it and you create a separate dimension, like you don't make it the exact size and height of it, because then that would be closer to a forgery. You're showing that like you are sort of paying respect and tribute to it. Guys, for the rest of my life, I will be buying these pieces from China. It's incredible. It came. I lost my mind after watching the art doc. It was like 11 at night. And I was like, Alan, will you take a video of me opening it? And he goes, at 11 at night? I was like, okay, I'll do it myself. And I like held my own camera. I was like, this is just so exciting. So it came and it
show.
Came.
Show.
Let me see the butter. Let me see the mound.
Oh my God, it looks beautiful.
Guys, it's a great,
that is beautiful.
Great
it's
piece
big.
Of butter. It's okay. So it is slightly off by like 2 inches either side or 1 inch.
Do you know
inch.
If it's oil, acrylic? Like what?
How are the strokes?
Shiny?
Yes, it is a
How are the strokes?
I'm showing this. Okay, this, guys, the strokes fuck me up. They are so beautiful. And there are little brush strokes in it. And also, so the thing is that they, because you're paying them, they say, if you have any adjustments, let us know and our artist can redo it. So I said, I think I'd like a little more shading on the like gauze. And they're like, you're absolutely right. And so I had some input on the scam. The drawing is exquisite.
No, I want to fuck it.
It needs to be in your bedroom.
You know, I was like, Alan, can I put it above the bed? He's like, whatever you need, honey. Like, whatever you need.
That's motivation, that butter.
This butter is living its best life.
What did we pay for it?
I think it was like $75 for the painting and then 30 something for shipping.
Worth
and
it.
Okay. If they're scamming me on shipping, I don't care. Like, I don't care who, like, this is worth millions, you know, in an art gallery.
I'm looking it up. I want to see how much
it's so expensive. And so this company, and I can like put it in the link below, and you can select. So they have amazing artists that you can select from masters and historic paintings in their collection. Or you could ask for something special. And I sent them this Wikipedia page and they're like, no problem, we got it. And they redid it for me specially. They weren't giving out butter. They weren't just giving out butter. I requested butter and we created this butter together.
Wow. Do they want to advertise on the podcast? Because that is an endorsement.
I'm putting them on. There's actually multiple companies. And apparently there's like whole towns and they have a whole setup. And I'm so excited for them. And I want them to take all of my money. They should. We should be paying active artists. And I want the money to go to them. And I want to celebrate them.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
I want to celebrate this art. And I want to celebrate the fact that like we are in on this scam. I don't feel duped. I feel very powerful. I think that's what I wanted out of the movie too. I wanted Anne to celebrate that like, yeah, wasn't this crazy? Like maybe I was a victim. Maybe I was all in it, but it could have been, I would have been so on her side if she was like, yeah, at the time, everything was working in my favor and I was just enthralled to be so famous.
I'm team Anne. Anne's no snitch and I appreciate that about her.
I am team Anne.
Anne,
same.
Suck it. I hate her. Take a toe.
Ooh, do you think, because you know how they were going to take it to trial, right? They were going to take the lawsuit, domino, whatever, to trial. And they were specifically going to sue Michael Hammer because he was the owner of the gallery.
100%.
Do we think that they settled out of court because of Michael Hammer's, like, naughty chair?
100%.
Oh. He's like, you can borrow the naughty chair.
I was thinking more like threats or like Dominic, whatever, was like, wow, I don't want anything to do with this.
I like all of these options. I like all of these options. I like threats. I like usage. I like it all. Yeah, they definitely settled out of court. Everybody got out scot-free. Maybe Anne used the you know, Army's chair. And that's
Anne
why
she used the naughty chair to get out of court.
Maybe she was a chair fan. And the chair fan.
Yeah, was in the naughty chair.
Mm-hmm. She was the naughty girl.
And she was living her best life. Oh, guys, also this scam was going on for 30 years. That's what's so crazy is that the whole time she was like, Mr. X, he's kind of crazy. And then the story keeps changing and they can't find any more of the history. And they're like, now Mr. X is gay. It's like a whole long thing. And he's the stories were crazy. And it was two a year with a never seen before exotic painting. And it's just like there's
amazing.
Like tons of it's the most stupid thing.
I also couldn't find the price of Mound of Butter, the original, but I do know it's in the National Gallery.
In Washington?
Yeah. So maybe we could take a field trip, you know, post-coronavirus and try and swap it out.
Yes!
So, Katie, I think we can swap it out.
We can be like Ocean's 12 or whatever. And we'll go in and do an art gallery, one on top of the other, wearing a long trench coat, and we'll just put the paintings under the trench coat.
But the three of us have to get on top of each other and wear a very long trench coat.
Of course.
Right. Because we're all not super tall, so we need to be a tall.
Any listener who can hand sew us a trench coat, we'd very much appreciate it.
Oh, my God. Oh my God. Anyone
With
who can
many
help us.
Pockets. It needs to have huge pockets.
Yes. Yes, please. And if you can help us in this scam, our destiny to scam the art.
Join the team.
Email us at scamwildpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. And if you like want to be a part of this and you have some sort of like device, like listening device, and you could hook up with like a weird van in the back that we could have like a couple cameras watched.
Then if you have spy stuff.
If you have spy stuff, call us at our hot tip hotline at 347-509-9414.
And you know, if you want to find out more about scams and be a scam expert, go to our website, scamwildpodcast.com, and you can see everything and listen to all our old episodes. Baby.
Yeah, and if you have a friend that like likes to spray security cameras and then could like flip and do things like they did in Ocean's 11, like can get in a tiny box and then pop out and like could be like very agile, then you should look at our Patreon page because we talk all about our medication on that page. And I feel like those two things have to connect. Like if you're,
They must.
If you're talking about something hiding in a box and popping out, literally your birth story.
Literally. Our babies popped out. I thought you were going to say my Prozacs. They pop out every night and I love them. And guys, also we're on the Stereo app, so you can always check in with us on Friday nights and talk about the heist there.
Yes, we're doing live after shows every Friday night on Stereo. You can go to stereo.com/Katie Brodnick or stereo.com/SueSmith666 to follow us.
Kate, thank you so much for being our scam mama on this.
We pinched you into this and you were great.
And that pizza is frigid cold, but you know what? The scams are hot, hot, hot.
I'll put it in the microwave and scam myself.
All right, you guys.
Oh my God, we love you guys. Thank you so much, Sue. Thank you, Kate. This was the best.
Thank you, both Kates. I love you both.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make season two even more memorable together.